So we started this morning with the words of the disciples who said about Jesus, "What kind of a man is this? Even the winds, even the waves obey him." This was after Jesus had been resting and sleeping in a storm. The disciples panicked. He spoke to the elements, the weather, and it was still. And they said, "What kind of a man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." And the question for us this morning must be, surely, do you ever feel that you are in a storm? And I'm sure that the answer for most of you would be, yes, I do. Maybe some of you would say, even today, we feel that we are in a storm. So then the next question will be, what do you hold on to during the storm? Who do you hold on to? In whom do you put your faith? Jesus says that the wise man built his house on rock, the foolish man built his house on sand, and there was no foundation for the one that was on the sand. But of course, when you think about it, a ship has no foundations. A ship has no foundations. It is floating. So the foundations of our life must not and cannot be physical foundations. What is the thing that holds us steady? Who is the person that holds us steady? Who is the foundation of our life when we are living in a place where there are no physical foundations, where the structures of the world can no longer be trusted because of wars, disasters, earthquakes, floods, storms? Let's read together. Let's go on to the next slide, please. Okay, so we are in Acts chapter 27 this morning. Let's start reading at verse 1. Acts 27, verse 1. "When it was decided that we would sail for Italy, Paul and some other prisoners were handed over to a centurion named Julius, who belonged to the imperial regiment. We boarded a ship from Adratium, about to sail for ports along the coast of the province of Asia, and we put out to sea. Aristarchus, a Macedonian from Thessalonica, was with us. The next day we landed at Sidon, and Julius, in kindness to Paul, allowed him to go to his friends so that they might provide for his needs." We need to point out straight away here that Paul was at this point a prisoner. He did not make the decisions. Verse 1 tells us when it was decided. Not when I decided, not when we decided, but when those in authority decided. He did not make the decisions. And if you look in verse 37, a sneak preview, you'll find that on this ship there were 276 people. What's interesting is that although he did not make the decisions, although he was a prisoner, although he was just one out of 276 people, you will see as the narrative progresses that he had a massive influence, much more than his 276 part, if you understand what I mean. He was so much more than one of 276. He has an amazing influence. But as a prisoner, he's not listened to at first, but later on he is. And here, even here is a question for us. Maybe your situation is not ideal, but you can still live for God and be used by God. Maybe people around you won't listen now, but maybe by speaking now, you will be setting the scene for later, building credibility for later. And the other aspect on this, which you can see on the slide, you know, God did miracles through the Apostle Paul, but even an apostle has needs. He needed his friends, and we see here that Julius, in kindness to Paul, allowed him to go to his friends in Sidon that they might provide for his needs. Worth just mentioning a tiny bit about Sidon, because Jesus met a woman in this area and he ministered to her and her daughter, driving out a demon, but not without some discussion. I'm just going to read that to you. It's in Mark chapter 7. The woman in question was a Greek born in Syrian Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. But Jesus replied, "First, let the children eat all that they want, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." And the woman replied, "Lord, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." And Jesus replied, "For such a reply you may go, the demon has left your daughter." She and her family had received spiritual food from Jesus in this area. And now it's interesting that the believers in Jesus, motivated by that same spiritual food and that spiritual life that Jesus declares, they're now looking after Paul's practical needs, which we assume would have included food as well. Let's move to our next slide, please. Verse 4, "From there we set out to sea again and passed to the lee of Cyprus because the winds were against us. When we had sailed across the open sea off the coast of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we landed at Myra in Lycia. There the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing for Italy and put us on board. We made slow headway for many days and we had difficulty arriving off Cnidus. When the wind did not allow us to hold our course, we sailed to the lee of Crete opposite Salmone. We moved along the coast with difficulty and came to a place called Fair Havens near the town of Lassia." I wonder, do you ever feel that you are making little progress in life? Have you ever felt that you're making little progress in life? Maybe just raise a hand if you identify with that question. Sometimes we feel that we are making little progress in life. And if that's what you feel, then you are not alone. Because on this ship, we are told, verse 7, we made slow progress. We made slow headway for many days. What did Paul do when they made slow headway? When progress was not great, what did he do? Well, I believe that he held on to his faith in Jesus Christ. His faith even as a prisoner. And things get more difficult. Let's move to the next slide, please. Verse 9, "Much time had been lost and sailing had already become dangerous because by now it was after the Day of Atonement." That's a calendar date for us to say, you know, it was getting to that time of year when sailing was dangerous. But Paul holds on to faith in Jesus. Let's move on to the next slide, please. Verse 9, "Much time had been lost and sailing had already become dangerous because by now it was after the Day of Atonement. So Paul warned them, 'Men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and cargo and to our own lives also.' But the centurion, instead of listening to what Paul said, followed the advice of the pilot and the owner of the ship. Paul is hanging on to faith in Jesus Christ at this point, and he was even prepared to speak, inspired by God, even when his advice was ignored. You see verse 11, the centurion, instead of listening to Paul, followed the advice of the pilot and the owner of the ship. Remember, of course, that Paul, as I've said, was just one of 275 passengers or people on board. And that means there were 275 other people and 275 other voices. Yeah? 275 other voices saying what they should do. So it's not surprising, in a sense, that they did not listen to him. But by speaking now, he is preparing the way for them to listen to him later. And this calls for wisdom for us also. What about us? Are we prepared to speak at the right time? How do we know when it will be the right time? And the fact that people listen to us or not doesn't necessarily dictate whether it is the right time or not. Sometimes we are called to speak even when people will not listen. And we are called to maintain our cool, so to speak, even if we are ignored on this occasion. Let's move to the next slide, please. Since the harbour was unsuitable to winter in, the majority decided that we should sail on, hoping to reach Phoenix and winter there. This was a harbour in Crete, facing both southwest and northeast. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they saw their opportunity, so they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Before very long, a wind of hurricane force called the Northeaster swept down from the island. And you can see the title I've put here on this slide. Beware of what the majority decide. Verse 12 says, the harbor was unsuitable to winter in. The majority decided that we should sail on, hoping to reach Phoenix before the winter. We need to be cautious, my friends, my brothers, my sisters, about doing what the majority are doing. In many aspects of our lives, we will hear that everyone is doing a certain thing. Everyone is adopting a certain attitude. But we are called to be led by the living God. And doing what the majority decide isn't always the right action to take. Then there's this other phrase that we have in our world today. People talk about, you know, I saw a window of opportunity. Be cautious about this one also. If you look in verse 13, when a gentle south wind began to blow, they saw their opportunity, so they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. A window of opportunity is not necessarily a God opportunity. It might be, but it might not be. So we need to be cautious when we see these windows of opportunity. Say, well, yes, even those who do not know and love the Lord might recognize this as a window of opportunity, but I, as a child of God, surely I have to be asking, what is God saying to me, to my family, to us in this situation? This also calls for wisdom. Let's move on to the next slide, please. We've already asked the question, do you ever feel that you are making little progress in life? Now we have another question, do you ever feel that you are struggling to hold it all together? Perhaps I'll get a response again. Raise your hands. Do you ever feel that you're struggling to hold it all together? Yeah? Some people feel that. You're struggling to hold it all together. Let's read on, because you're going to see this in this passage now. Verse 15. The ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it and were driven along. As we passed to the lee of a small island called Cauda, we were hardly able to make the lifeboat secure. So the men hoisted it aboard. Then they passed ropes under the ship itself to hold it together. Because they were afraid they would run aground on the sandbars of Syrtis, they lowered the sea anchor and let the ship be driven along. I ask you the question, do you ever feel that you're struggling to hold it all together? These guys are on a ship and they are effectively wrapping the ship in string. Okay, rope. But when you think of the size of a ship, it's like when you wrap a parcel in the olden days in brown paper and then you put string around it to hold it all together. They're wrapping the ship in string, in rope, hoping they might be able to hold it together. But have you ever seen the way water moves in the ocean in a storm? Have you ever seen the way that wood flexes? And they're hoping that this rope might somehow keep that flexing in under control and save the ship from literally breaking apart. How desperate was their situation. And sometimes you and I may feel that we're really struggling to hold it all together. Well, what we're going to see is they had to let go of the ship. But by the grace of God, those lives were saved. Let's move on to the next slide, please. It doesn't get any easier. We took such a violent battering from the storm that the next day they began to throw the cargo overboard. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. And when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. Do you ever feel that you want to just give up all hope? I wonder what material things do you hold dear in this life? Your home, your car, your hobbies, your family. And we read here that these sailors who were, let's face it, they were running a business. They weren't just, you know, they weren't just going out for a little sailing trip. They were running a business. That was the whole point of being in the shipping industry. They had cargo, probably grain. And they shipped it from one place to another to make money. They're running their business. And now what are they doing? They are throwing their stock overboard. This is just a helpless situation, to throw your stock overboard. And then in verse 19, it gets even worse. They threw the ship's tackle overboard with their hands. Some of the gubbins that is used for sailing, you've got things like beams, and you've got sails, big sails, small sails, all the ropes and so on. And all of these weigh a lot. And in order to lighten the ship, they're throwing this overboard. But it's kind of like a taxi driver ripping the engine out of his car. Do you see how desperate the situation is? And verse 20 says that neither sun nor stars appeared for many days. You might say we live in the UK. We know what it feels like when you don't see the sun for days. Have you ever given up all hope? I would say that Jesus can minister to you. Jesus can minister to us, even in the most hopeless storm. And there was a word that we have for when God ministers to us in the storm, and that word is grace. And that word appears on our next slide, please. Grace and life in the storm. Verse 21 says, after they had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up before them and he said, men, you should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete. Then you would have spared yourselves this damage and this loss. But now I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost, only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood beside me and said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island. Paul says in verse 21, you should have taken my advice. Do you see how important now it is that back earlier he spoke even when people were not listening to him? Because now they see that he has credibility. What he said would happen has happened. So now they are more willing to listen to him. And there's a warning there, because in that same verse 21, we're told, you should have taken my advice, then you would have spared yourselves this damage and this loss. And we need to remind ourselves that if we do not heed the advice of the Lord, if we do not heed the advice of Scripture, then we will suffer damage and loss. Many times when people say, pray for me, I'm going through this situation or that situation, or my son-in-law or my daughter-in-law or whoever, they're going through this situation. Many times it's because we or they have not heeded the word of the Lord. We've not taken the advice of the Lord, and therefore we suffer damage and loss. But even in that situation, there is hope by the grace of God. Look what Paul says. Verse 22, I now urge you. Not one of you will be lost. How does he know that? How does he know that not one of them will be lost? Because God has spoken to him. And God speaks to us today. Even today, God speaks to us. If we will open his word, if we will open the scripture and read it and apply it. And Paul says, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. Here we see grace and life in the storm. We see grace and life, the promise of grace and life in the storm. And what's interesting in this situation, you cannot escape the storm. You cannot escape the storm, but God can save you through the storm. That is, if we take courage based on the grace of God. You know, one of the biggest problems in our world today, and one of the things that they are teaching in schools, primary schools, secondary schools, is this whole thing about self-confidence. Have confidence in yourself. Be the best you can. You are wonderful. You are amazing. Here, they're being told to have confidence, not in themselves, but in the Word of God. The world talks about self-confidence, but we proclaim confidence in the living God. Let's move on to our next slide, please. On the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea, when about midnight, the sailors sensed that they were approaching land. They took soundings and found that the water was 40 meters deep. A short time later, they took soundings again and found it was 30 meters deep. Fearing that we would be dashed against the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for midnight. These are the sailors dropping anchors and praying. I wonder, to whom were they praying? I'm sure that there were a lot of different cultures and religions and superstitions on board. Were they praying to the living God? Maybe some were, maybe some were not. In an attempt to escape from the ship, verse 30, the sailors let the lifeboat down into the sea, pretending they were going to lower some anchors from the bow. Then Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay with the ship, you cannot be saved." So the soldiers cut the ropes that held the lifeboat and let it drift away. We have in the English language a phrase, "Do not abandon a sinking ship," and that is exactly what the sailors wanted to do. They wanted to get onto the lifeboat and be out of there. They did not care about all the other people on the ship who would have died. Do not desert your brothers and sisters during the storm. That's important, yeah? Just before dawn, verse 33, Paul urged them all to eat. He said, "For the last 14 days, you have been in constant suspense and have gone without food. You haven't eaten anything." How many of you have had this experience when you're in difficult situations where you feel like you're going through a storm? Eating is something you don't do easily. You need encouragement to eat. And this is what Paul says to them. Verse 34, "Now I urge you to take some food. You need it to survive. Not one of you will lose a single hair from his head." After he said this, he took some bread and gave thanks to God in front of them all. Then he broke it and began to eat. They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. Altogether, there were 276 of us on board. When they had eaten as much as they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the grain into the sea. Now, this encouragement of Paul for them to eat and him taking bread, and giving thanks to God, and breaking it, and eating it. I would not suggest that this was a celebration of the Last Supper, nor of the Passover. There would have been people from different cultures, different religions, different faiths, no faith, superstitions, and so on. I'm not suggesting that this is a celebration of the Passover or the Last Supper. And yet, on those two great occasions of God's deliverance, what does God say to the people before he delivers them? Eat. Before the slaves were set free in the time of Moses, they are told to eat on the night before they leave. On the night before the crucifixion of Jesus, the disciples are told to eat. What about us when we are facing the storms of life? Surely we also need to eat. Not only physical food, we need to eat the bread of life. And Jesus says about himself in John chapter 6, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." He goes on to say, "I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread, this living bread, will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world." When we're in the storm, We need to be eating. We need to be eating real food. That's why we need to be feeding on the body of Jesus. That's why we need to be reading his word. And here's an interesting thing. God had said to Paul, you're going to be okay because I want you to stand before Caesar. You're going to get to Rome in one piece. But why did God save all the other 275 people on board? He could have just plucked Paul out and left the others to die. But here's the thing, you see, that the grace and life in the storm was for Paul, but it was also shared with the other 275 people. So here's a challenge for you. What about the 275 people that you know? And actually, if you think about it, many of you probably do know 275 people. If you think about people you know and the people that they know, so these are like acquaintances and so on. What about the 275 people you know, or for you maybe it's a smaller number or a larger number even. What about them? Is God calling you to hold on to life and grace in the storm for yourself, but also to be a witness to those around you? Let's move on to the next slide, please. When daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach where they decided to run the ship aground if they could. Cutting loose the anchors, they left them in the sea and at the same time untied the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. Remember, we read earlier that they'd thrown some of the tackle overboard, but obviously some of the gubbins, some of the stuff they had kept, they'd still got the foresail, and they are hoisting the foresail, and they're making for the beach. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground. The bow stuck fast and would not move, and the stern was broken to pieces by the pounding of the surf. Remember, we said that they tied the boat together with string, trying to hold it all together when they passed the ropes underneath it, but this was not enough to keep the ship in one place. The soldiers planned to kill the prisoners to prevent any of them from swimming away and escaping, but the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life and kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land. The rest were to get there on planks or on other pieces of the ship. And in this way, everyone reached land safely. The photo on this screen here is wreckage from a shipwreck. That's been on the beach in Cornwall for over 100 years. But that is bits of ship that have just been there for 100 years, yeah? This was a desperate situation that Paul and those 275 other people were in. And yet, in this way, in this grace and life in the storm way, everyone reached land safely. So the question is for us, are we willing to trust God through the storm that we are going through at the moment? As you hold on to grace and life in the storm, you can be an encouragement to others also. To trust God for grace and life in the storm. But the narrative hasn't ended yet. Let's keep going. We've got just one or two more slides. Yeah. If God uses you, or if God uses people around you, please, my friends, my brothers, my sisters, beware of jumping to extremes. If God uses people, beware that you could get the whole thing out of context. The focus then goes from living God to little gods. And that is very dangerous. Let's read, we're in now chapter 28. Once safely on shore, we found out that the island was called Malta. The islanders showed us unusual kindness. They built a fire and welcomed us all because it was raining and cold. I do wonder, did they toast marshmallows as they sat around the fire? I don't know. But verse 3 tells us, Paul gathered a pile of brushwood and, as he put it on the fire, a viper, driven out by the heat, fastened itself on his hand. When the islanders saw the snake hanging from his hand, they said to each other, "This man must be a murderer, for though he escaped from the sea, the goddess, known as Justice, has not allowed him to live." But Paul shook the snake off into the fire and suffered no ill effects. The people expected him to swell up or suddenly fall dead, but after waiting a long time and seeing nothing unusual happen to him, they changed their minds and they said he was a god. My friends, my brothers and sisters, as I say, beware of extremes. They call him a murderer, then they call him a god. If you want to be technically correct here, of course, Paul was, in fact, a murderer. He had put to death the people of the Lord in his former life. Yes. But that's not the point here. And he wasn't, you know, in this situation with the serpent, the snake, because of having been a murderer. So yes, it so happens he had in the past been a murderer, but we have to say he certainly was not a god. That is, a god with a little g, or what you might call a little god. And here's the thing, you see, because little gods cannot be used by the living God. And Paul never behaves like a little god. There are other places in this same book of Acts where people wanted to worship him because of what God had done through him. He always resists the temptation of being acclaimed as a little god. He always chooses to serve the living God. Little gods cannot serve the living God. And so here's a question for each one of us. Are you a little god, or are you a servant of the living God? You cannot be both. And when you think about your children and your grandchildren and your nieces and your nephews, or even about your parents or your brothers and sisters, how do you see them? Do you see them as little gods, or do you encourage them to serve the living God? Let's move now to our final slide, healing on Malta. There was an estate nearby that belonged to Publius, the chief official of the island. He welcomed us to his home and showed us generous hospitality for 3 days. His father was ill in bed, suffering from fever and dysentery. Paul went in to see him and prayed, placing his hands on him, and healed him. When this had happened, the rest of those on the island who were ill came and were cured. They honored us in many ways, and when we were ready to sail, they furnished us with the supplies we needed. Because Paul held on to grace and life in Jesus during the storm, he was even able to bring God's blessing and healing to the islanders on Malta. And though he didn't seek anything for himself, as a result, the islanders were also a blessing to him and to all the other passengers waiting rescue. Let us trust God for grace and life during the storm. Amen.